let's get all the responses, and then the acting DDG should be the last to respond. Maybe let's go in the manner in which we receive presentation. Start with forgot your name. Temba, yeah. And then just like that until we have got 30 minutes to conclude this discussion.
Honourable Chair, thanks very much. We've noted some of the comments and the questions thereof. The issue of gender composition per campus, per college of the students, it's noted. We'll attend to that in terms of providing those statistics instead of just council representation. We had planned that the appointment of councils should be finalized by end of August this year so that the inductions commence in September. As we stand, 33 councils out of 48 have been appointed. Only 15 are outstanding. So we hope, we anticipate completing the process by the end of the month. Specifically, on West Call, there were two council nominees that are still outstanding. Those have been scheduled to undertake the vetting process tomorrow. It is the 5th of September, and that process takes 48 hours for the results to come. So we hope that by next week, West Call would have been finalized. Suffice also to mention that there's two processes at West Call. One is that of the appointment of council, so that the council is duly constituted. Another one relates to an investigation which was conducted, which investigation has been finalized, and it's been processed for the minister's consideration of the recommendations thereof. Chair, we note the assertion that most of the recently appointed council members are from municipalities, and then that there's an issue of competence which has been raised. Now, what I'm aware of is that the previous minister had rejected quite a lot of nominees from municipalities and from the government itself. So what we are proposing is that we should prepare a detailed analysis of the industries from which current council members come from, so that as we engage with this issue, it's from a very concrete point of view. It's an exercise that we also need to undertake. We note also the request for an outline of the TVET sector institutional arrangements that we will prepare and provide to the committee. In regards to people who are not competent, who are failing the vetting, let's also indicate that it was for the first time that council members were taken through the vetting exercise. In this session of appointment, none of them with the criminal records were appointed. But what we found is that in the previous cycle of the councils, those who were already appointed, when they went for the vetting exercise this time around, some of them, their results came back negative, which means that in the previous term of office of councils, people with criminal records and so on were appointed, but not this time around. The term of office, Chairperson, it's 5 years of a council, irrespective of the date in which other members of councils of the council were appointed. Now, it's an issue which has been raised with us, and that may require a review of the legislation there. Because what we've been told is that with universities, the council of an appointed member, the term of office of an appointed member is 5 years. So you would have the term of office of some members expiring and that of other members continuing. But in this case, if member A is appointed last year and member B is appointed this year, when the term of office of the entire council expires, it expires for all of them, irrespective of when they were appointed. So we may need to review the legislation in that regard. Chair, we also take the point about the SFC election format requiring to be standardized and made transparent, as well as increased oversight monitoring of this process. To this extent, we may need to, actually we are certainly going to need to either develop a specific regulation or policy that is going to be applicable throughout. Because what the Act is saying is that the process must be fair, transparent, and so on. But if there are practices that point to the contrary, it's a matter that we need to take seriously and regularize moving forward. We are going to provide, Chair, we've noted the request on the criteria for the appointment and the guidelines for the appointment of council members. There are specific gazettes there which we are going to provide that outline in detail that process. The role of managers versus councils, Chairperson, as well as the roles and responsibilities of council. Those of specifically of councils are outlined in the CET Act, both in the main legislation as well as in Schedule 1, which is the standard college statute. In summary, council is responsible for oversight, monitoring of the performance of the college, policy development. It is also responsible for approval of the strategic plan, the financial statements, and there are appointments that are conducted by council. Also responsible for the provision of academic programs at the college, and through its various committees of council, is responsible for monitoring over various aspects such as human resource management through the HR subcommittee, financial management and auditing. We have the subcommittee there. We also have subcommittees on infrastructure development and risk management. We also take note of a better oversight monitoring and evaluation of reports, and to that extent, regulations have been developed and they will be consulted on before they are being finalized. Chairperson, principals do not have any role whatsoever in the appointment of council members. Council members section, those who get the 5 that have been appointed by the minister, solely by the minister. What principals can just do is just to facilitate the process of advertising, receiving CVs, but the CVs come to the department. It is the department that processes those CVs and makes recommendations to the minister. Excuse me. Chairperson, the principals, their recruitment is conducted through a public advertisement. I think this matter, we need to also be honest and admit that historically there's never been a university that is training lecturers and principals, specifically for the TVET sector. Mr. Mlojo, you help me here. It's only two universities so far that are providing those programs. And it is a fact that most of the lecturers in the sector and the principals are recruited from the and have been trained for the secondary school situation. But through the continuous professional development program, it's an area that we are attending to. Several partnerships have been established with various institutions. For example, in October next month, about 16 of our college principals, both community college and TVET colleges, are going for extensive training in leadership and governance and the running of the TVET colleges in the USA in partnership with the Florida State University. So that is but one of the initiatives that we are undertaking in this regard. And in the long run, we anticipate rolling that out throughout the sector together with the continuous professional development of lecturers. I think that is insofar as governance and matters are concerned. Let me also clarify through you, Chair, that, look, candidates that are rejected through the vetting process have not been
upon. Just finish the response to the recruitment of principals in their term of office.
No, the principals are recruited through a public process and are taken through selection interviews and the competency assessment. They do not, and the vetting exercise, they do not have a specific term of office. Once they are appointed, they are appointed permanently. You know, so currently there is no fixed term of office for the principals.
Okay, can we move or are you done?
Yes, I'm done. Thanks, Chair President.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll cover the funding issues.
Yeah.
And that's followed then by the infrastructure issues. Thank you, Chair. As indicated by the Director General, we have spoken about the underfunding of the TVET system. That links to the question that was also posed by Safetsa to say that why is the 10% allocation that's provided through the funding norms not utilized for infrastructure maintenance? Now, Chair, that's directly linked to the underfunding of the system. If you don't have sufficient funding to cover your enrollments, the first thing that you will use is your infrastructure maintenance to cover your operational shortfalls. That's directly linked. So that's the reason, I think, why the current infrastructure was or is in a state that it is because of the underfunding of the system and the non-utilization of the 10% that is earmarked for repairs and maintenance. So that's a direct link to the underfunding of the system. Chair, the next question that I've got, specifically the unallocated subsidies. Chair, our direct transfers or subsidies are quarterly payments to TVET colleges. Now, if you look at that table on page 25, referring to the unallocated budget, that is the current unallocated subsidies, but it is going to be allocated now at the end of September. The response that I gave initially was we were awaiting data for special needs. That's a fact. We have now collected data from TVET colleges, specifically in terms of students with special needs. That will now form a baseline funding adjustment. We're going to use this money now to give a baseline specific allocation to TVET colleges based on the data received. Also, the Centers of Specialization enrollment plans will now also be finalized, which will then inform the utilization of these funds. So the unallocated subsidies will now be allocated by the end of September. Chair, the next question that I've got is, if I do understand it correctly, It was asking about the auditor general audit outcomes, the IG audit outcomes. Now, I assume you refer to TVET colleges or DHET. I'm going to do this on TVET college level. Hope that's correct. So on TVET college level, it's a broad assessment, Chair. We can submit the detail to you for the audit outcomes for each TVET college. But a broad sense, that's what you asked. We're sitting approximately with 5 out of 50 on disclaimers. Now, we have improved over the last 3 or 4 years from the disclaimers then were about 9. So we're about 5. Qualified audits is about 15, which represents 30%. And unqualified is about 60% or 30 out of 50. So we've moved dramatically over the past 3 or 4 years. But we can submit to the Portfolio Committee the detail. I'm giving you just a high-level overview. And that's also, I think, SAFESA also recognized improvements in audit outcomes in their presentation. Jay, the question about red tape on the infrastructure side. Specifically on the infrastructure, yes, we do recognize, and it's also been indicated by SACPRO, that we have made it very stringent at this stage, specifically the infrastructure funding. What we plan to do, we recognize that we don't want to delay the expenditure, but it's very important for us to make sure that the expenditure or the funds are appropriately utilized for its intended purpose. But what we're going to do is we'll design a type of a maturity model. So colleges that's currently proving themselves to be effective and efficient with the utilization and the application of the funds, we might not do work package approvals because that's what we're doing now. We individually approving work packages. We would then rather for those colleges that's very mature in terms of their processes approve a maintenance plan for the year. That will then unbundle the red tape that you've referred to and will make it much more easier for them to procure and process. So that's the idea that we've got. But we need to firstly, on this round, send our auditors. I would really like to see, from an audit perspective, on the application of the funds. If the auditors tells us it's fine, either internal or external audit, then they will be grouped into another maturity level for overall maintenance plan approval and not work packages. And we're planning to send auditors now in about a month or two. We've actually started now with site visits as well. So that's specifically on the infrastructure side. The next question that we had was specifically on student accommodation, asking about that. I know Mr. Mormon's going to discuss that, but the current infrastructure that we've got, the SIG funds, or the Capital Infrastructure Efficiency Grant, that $1.4 billion that we've discussed, it does not include student accommodation at this stage. The reason being is that we would like from a department side, we need to firstly sort out the repairs and maintenance on current core teaching and learning facilities. Only once that has been able to be resolved, we can talk about new capital. So I'm just saying from an infrastructure, from that fund specifically, no provision yet for student accommodation. What we are doing on student accommodation is we're making sure safety and health is done. That's a no given. I mean, if there's problems with fire extinguishers and those type of things in current student accommodation, we resolve it. But we don't have sufficient funding currently to use that to do new capital on student accommodation. Even in the current infrastructure projects, the current sites that we've discussed, those 13 sites, there's no student accommodation provided on those sites currently. It's just not affordable at this stage. I know Mr. Mormon is going to discuss this. There's a possibility of triple P's, but Mr. Mormon will discuss that. For student accommodation, we have looked at some models for public-private partnerships, but that's the only strategy that we really have at this stage to cover student accommodation. But Ms. Mormon will give you feedback in terms of that. Thank you, Chair. That's from the funding side.
Thank you.
I think there's just one question that was not answered. I don't know if it's relevant to the gentleman in finance, but I asked who administers the funds for students.
Apologies for that, Chair. Can I respond? Chair, how the NASFAS, your question is on the NFAS, right? So how it works is the department receives the allocation from National Treasury, That allocation consists of two types, tuition fees and allowances. The department then calculates the budget per college, but on the tuition fee only. That's that column that I showed you earlier on the right-hand side. That money is then transferred to NSFAS, right, together with the allowances. Colleges then, from a tuition side, they submit college registration data to NSFAS, then for eligible students qualifying for bursaries. NSFAS will then either, they've got two types of models currently. In some instances, they pay the college. The college disperses the allowances to students. On the other side, they've got an electronic system called SBUC and e-wallet, yeah. So it's two types of models that's currently in play, either through a college or through a direct transfer to the student through the e-wallet processes. And again, what the department does, we prescribe standard bursary rules and guidelines for the utilization of those funds. We prescribe it to the colleges and to NSFAS. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Infrastructure?
Chair, I'll attempt to answer the questions that were put forward. I think to start off with, we've already acknowledged the shortage of funding in the sector, so let's not continue to berate it, it's a fact. So the reality of that in terms of the new infrastructure program, that is the 16 sites, 10 of those sites had student accommodation planned in them, and due to budgetary restraints, we have them on the site development plan, but they're not there for construction at present. However, two of the sites that are currently nearing completion have one student accommodation block each of 124 beds, plus it's a catered model, so there's a kitchen unit and a serving hall, a dining hall. Then in terms of the broader student accommodation initiatives, there is a process currently underway in the department of looking at triple P's. We had a process which identified three for consideration. They are at the moment King Hinsa, Mateo, and Northlink. Of the three, Mateo at this stage was not found to be viable, so we have to look at a different model there. But King Hinsa has been earmarked for a 800-bed unit at Teco. We are pursuing that in discussion with Treasury. In fact, we've already begun the process to put in place the bulk services for it. Northlink has looked at a development plan for their Tigerbird site, which will have something like 1,000 beds. But that is also a triple P, because there just simply isn't the funding to drive the actual CAPEX and OPEX, because we mustn't forget, even though we might put the CAPEX in place, the OPEX costs of those utilities are actually more than the program costs in many cases. So that's a dual challenge. But, yeah, we've earmarked a few more, but for now, I think that suffice to say that's the strategy of the department. Majuba has a few ideas also on triple P, which we've been trying to support on. But in a sense, it is driven on the base of opportunity and potential availability of external funding at this stage. Now, there was a question around the matter of ICT. So, again, there's a two-part process. The first part is funded by NSF. There's an initiative underway at the moment which is linking all the sites in the country. That's 241, if I'm not mistaken, when I last counted. They are going to be linked to SANRED. Now, that is funded by the NSF, and it's at tender stage at the moment. That process will make available a significant pipe into each campus. And then parallel to that is, of course, the standards for Wi-Fi, which we've developed. In fact, the standards for Wi-Fi and connectivity are put in place on the new sites. We have it as a standard, and so that will be done hand in glove together.
So do you know when is that going to be?
Chair, I'm giving you the report as if I'm there, but I'm actually not in that process. I'm just giving you the overall picture. My understanding is it's going out to tender, and it will take about 2 years to get most of those sites up and running. In many cases, there's no direct link. I mean, if you take Tabo Zimbi, a brand new site.
Who's doing it? NSF.
NSF is funding it, yes. It's been done through an entity called Sabin. Sabin is the college version of Tenet. Tenet is the fiber provider for the universities. And as you know, Sabin is under DTI. So, sorry, DST. So it's actually a combination process. So the fiber connections are being put in place by Sabin.
So this entity is under what that is doing it for the colleges?
Yes.
It's under DST also?
Yes, DST.
Okay.
So the big link with DST, in fact, is the ring. You've got SANRIN, the National Research and Education Network, the ring that's around the country. There's a 10 gigabyte ring running around the country to which all the higher education institutions are linked.
Uh-huh.
So now we're paralleling up with the TVET colleges onto that ring. It's a low-cost initiative because the CapEx and investment was done via government. Okay, but it's a massive...
Okay, so the entity you can brief us on that, is it NSF?
It'll be NSF. They are funding that, yes. And then they have the control or the committee that oversights that process, so they can give you all the links into SANRIN and into Sabin.
So, continue. I want us to wrap up now.
Yeah, I think I've covered the key questions. It was accommodation and ICT. And in terms of the current sites, we have made provision around accommodation, but there simply just isn't the funding from a CAPEX or an OPEX to drive it through.
Okay. Thank you. Closing comments?
Before I go into closing comments, could I allow Ms. Shetlow to speak to some of the very important examinations issues that came up?
Okay.
And there were, you know, concerns around certification, which she can clearly speak to. So could we give her a moment to do that?
All right.
Thank you, Chair and honorable members. The issues around certification backlog have been forthcoming. And I think from 2017, with the previous administration, I think, as the DG has alluded to, there were some reports that were tabled to the portfolio committee. But then there's been some strides that have been made by the department. In February, actually, the DG established a war room, kind of, and we looked into different issues that could be contributing to the certification backlog. From the department ourselves, what we did was to get data from the colleges themselves so that we could do a spade work ourselves. And the war room actually indicated issues around capacity at CETA, which is a dependency for the department. And that issue around the dependency for CETA has been raised also in the previous portfolio committee. But what we then did was to come around with other strategies where we're engaging as a department colleges themselves. And they're submitting data of outstanding, and we intervene from them. There were some complex issues.
So what is the dependency all about?
It's the IT infrastructure. The CETA state information technology. So they're hosting our data, the department data, on exams. So due to capacity, they've lost some key resources, programmers, which are complicating issues around, very complex issues of around combinations. But we're getting around there. Those are few issues that we've picked up. But in terms of the technicalities, is a question from that war room, we picked up that it's issues around qualification requirements. So that most of the students that do not qualify for certification, and some of them are still under the impression that they will qualify. So what we are doing as a department, we're actually engaging the colleges to kind of expose them to those that candidates that are clearly qualifying and those that are not qualifying. So we've made some good strides.
With due respect, please don't give us a convoluted response that we don't even understand what it says. Give us a simple response. These are the problems around certification. Is it CETA? Is it whether students have passed or not? So don't give us something that will even create more confusion. What is the problem with the backlog of certificates of students? If a student has passed, receives the marks that you have completed all the subjects, so what is the problem in getting a certificate?
Let me say, thanks, Chair, for that correction. Two issues. The major issue is CETA. That is a major issue. CETA is not in a position to assist us in terms of the program, IT program, to resolve.
To print the certificate.
Not to print, to resolve the issues around certifying learners. Can I give an example, Chair?
Okay.
Yes. There are learners who have continuously worked towards attaining a certificate. They passed three subjects 3 years ago. Then they are actually gradually working towards attaining a qualification. So they don't right away qualify to get a certification. So as a result, by the time the learner has accumulated all the subjects that could actually make him or her to get a certificate, the IT system must be in a position to combine all those previous records. Now, CETA is not able to do that. That is what we are struggling with. So the CETA system cannot pull the historical records to make sure that this particular candidate is actually qualifying now to get a certificate. As a result, we cannot even print the certificate because the IT system is unable to combine the previous records. So that is a major contributory factor that is delaying the certificates. So they're resolving each matter as it arises. Though we have made some strides, but we're still not satisfied. And to an extent that the DG has written to the DG, his counterpart, that side, to escalate the matter. And what we picked up, Honorable Chair, was that CETA has lost a good number of resources, programmers, that could actually be assisting. So it's an issue that
how
we need
the certificate
to.
Is issued is, because I want to make you, I want to help me understand. The information of the students at TVET is kept by CETA about progress they're making. It's not kept by the colleges themselves.
It's hosted on the main the CETA mainframe.
So I am a student.
Yes.
I enroll in a Dalets or TVET college. I'm doing engineering, whatever. So I've got three semesters. I've got six courses, for instance, that I'm doing. Each semester has got two courses. I pass the three semesters. So who has got the information about my academic progress?
As a department, we've got a system which is hosted on the CETA mainframe. We're able to access, we're able to see, we can manipulate. But,
yeah, but I'm saying who is the custodian of my academic progress? Is it the college or is it the department?
It's the department.
It's not the college?
No.
Is that not the problem there? That...
Okay.
Maybe let me just understand from the perspectives of the college principals and the students.
Okay.
Safeta, I see your hand.
Yeah, no, thanks, Chair. Chair, the presentation the explanation here is confusing, particularly because you'd come across a student that has completed with no subject that has been failed. You are expected to be in a semester course for 3 semesters. You complete the 3 semesters without you having to have failed. Each and every semester you receive an academic record that you get from the college. And later on you will receive a statement of results from the Department of Education confirming that what the college has given you is indeed a pass. Now, you are sitting with a statement from the Department of Education and the academic progress report of a college. Both can speak to each other, but still, you can't get your certificate. So it's not only the issue of those who have failed. There are those who have never failed who have been passing throughout. Can we get explanation on those also? Well, this one has never failed. There's nothing that will confuse you whether this one has studied and decided to drop out and came back. We understand that one can give a problem. But where a student has never failed, everything is there in record that this student has passed. You are waiting for your certificates. You can't get them. What is the explanation to that?
And then the president of the college principals, let's understand this from your perspective.
No, Chairperson, thank you very much. It's a long problem that we experience as colleges. Unfortunately, because the exams are managed nationally and they're centralized, and the colleges are feeding to the department once the exams have been written, then they also hold the information. We are having a serious backlog dating back to years because there are students, as the surveyor is also raising, who have studied, completed long time ago, but they are not certificated. They can't receive because of these systemic problems. But the department is definitely attending to them. There is a little bit of breakthroughs here and there, but I don't think we have reached the stage where we want to. But I think they are attending to them, and we are supporting as colleges. There are instances where the information that has been fed is at times incorrect. Some mistakes when they feed the ID numbers and stuff like that, but they are trying to resolve them because at times it's not the problem of a college, it's not of a department, but of those who are hosting the system.
Okay, Ma, can you answer the question? about those who,
yes,
who have not failed?
I think the principal actually covered me on the last part. I'm agreeing that there are some of those that are actually outstanding, but we have made some strides due to the issues precisely. Where you find that...
So, where does this come from? How many years are we talking about? Is it a year, 2 years, 3 years?
No. It is from the investigation that we have done on the system, it's actually from 2011.
So we've got an 8-year problem that we can't resolve.
We've got a baggage, I must confess, that we are dealing with. But those that, as Professor says, those that are once off, we're able to clear, as long as we got the corrections from the colleges. Because the issues are emanating from a situation...
And how many certificates are we talking about?
I've got some figures, but I can... Maybe let me just look at the figures. For business studies, because that one is up here, business studies from 2015 to 2018, and I must put it in context, from 2015 to 2018, out of 1,003,072,765, the outstanding to date is 4,296. So that corroborates what the principal has said, that we have kind of, as you know, from February, worked towards... diminishing that.
And that is just one discipline.
This is business studies. And then for engineering, from 2015 to 2018, out of 1,500 and something candidates, one million rather, 1,500 and something to date, as on the 22nd of last month, when we reported to the DG, we've got 22,000 plus outstanding.
On engineering?
On engineering, yes. And so then on NCV, and it's out of 1 million, out of 1 million candidates.
Hey, but this is shocking, you know.
No, it's actually, it's very serious. Chair, I must say that it's very serious, and that is why with the previous minister actually resorted to writing to the Minister of Communication, where CITA is reporting to, and the previous minister advised that the DG also writes to his counterpart at that site, so that CITA is actually resorting. Now, from the department, what we can deal with, we are engaging the colleges, and they are sending us spreadsheets, because we are saying, just indicate, and then issues that you have corrected from yourself, from the errors, then those we are able to resolve. But then the CITA issue is a serious one in terms of resolving the outstanding certificates.
Yeah, well, this is a big problem. I don't know why the same similar approach to, but the same things, the two things are not the same with NSFAS. You see, NSFAS had great difficulties. And there was an intervention of an administrator, and that intervention has worked. I don't know why there's no intervention on this thing of certificates. I mean, from 2011, we are now 2019. The figures that you account, you are reading there, are staggering figures. I mean, 24,000 in one discipline. We're talking about 22,000. We're talking about 22,000 students who can't get their certificates, who have been trained by the TVET system, who are supposed to gain employment opportunities. They can't prove that they have received the kind of training that they have. I mean, that's terrible. It's very terrible. I don't think we should explain this problem away, you see. And we should not even try to spin a problem. This is a serious problem. We must ask for the intervention at the level of the minister. If there is to be some kind of intervention, serious intervention, and resources as well, this must be done. I mean, I think we can continue like that. So I am not even going to allow us to engage this thing. All of us accepting it's a problem. It's a national crisis, in fact. So we must just ask that the minister must do something, and we must be briefed about this thing by the minister, about what has been done. Because, you see, speak to what Honorable Ngoi was saying. If at the exit point you are not able to manage the system, then the system is as good as, you know, not existing, or as having collapsed. Because the students get into the TVET system, they study, they pass. Even the process of passing is a problem, because we have got big challenges around the examinations, as we have accepted, as we have acceded to that. So the examination itself is a problem. After you have done the examination, you have said this ones have passed, this ones have failed. Even those that have passed, they are supposed to exit the system, can't prove that they have been part of the system. I think we must do something about that. We can only express our shock and our call for an urgent intervention by the minister. And please, what we need to do, there was one thing that I did not like, Madam, about your submission. that you briefed the committee in 2017, we must pull that briefing. And this is what I said to the DG, let's not approach matters like that. That was the fifth parliament, and this is the sixth parliament. And you can't assume, therefore, that because you have briefed the fifth parliament, the sixth parliament, by some magic, must know what the issues are. Because we go for the elections, you elect as part of the citizenry, whoever that you want to elect. There are new people coming into the system. You must brief them. So to say that because we brief those ones, there's no need to do that. Let's move away from that kind of approach to the issues. Because members are going to get angrier, and quite correctly so, because you can't say that. You can't say the fifth parliament knows, so you must go and ask what was happening in the fifth parliament. That is very wrong. So let's not explain the problem away. This is a problem. It needs to be attended. It's a crisis, a national crisis, if you were to ask me, in the TVET space, more than many other things. I'm going to ask you in 2 minutes, madam, to close, because we're supposed to go to the house now.
Can I withdraw that statement of the previous one?
Okay.
Okay, it was not with any other intention, but to overemphasize the backlog that it has been coming, not with the intention.
All right.
Sorry, thank you.
Okay.
Thank you
in
very much.
In a minute or two.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. In conclusion, Chair, as an opening remark of the conclusion, I just want to say thank you very much for the indulgence you have given to us in presenting for virtually the whole day. You've given a lot of time, and I want to say that all the concerns, thank both SACPO and SAFESA for their inputs as well, and to say that all the concerns, the inputs and the suggestions have been noted, and we will certainly be cognizant of those as we go about our work. We know that there's still a lot of work to be done. On the positive side, I must say, Chair, that on the governance issue, we have really committed to improving the process. Colleges were hampered by very adverse dynamics where the college councils were concerned. What we've had to deal with is both the issues of conflict and collusion at that level between management and council. Both are unhealthy. Where there's conflict and where there's collusion, it never serves the college well, and much of what we have done has been to address that, and we commit to getting those processes improved. The one I didn't respond to, Chair, because the comments came through thick and fast in many different permutations, was around the curriculum. And it's fully understood why that is a concern. I mean, that's why colleges exist, to deliver programs and to admit students. What is really sitting at the heart of the problem is that we don't have as yet, although we have started, I must say, 2019 has been a turning point, an integrated planning system, that integrates both the funding from the different subsystems, because there are different sources of funding to improve provision, as well as the information to feed into the skills demands. As one of the honorable member asked, do we use any of the scarce lists? Not only the scarce lists, there are priority occupations. There's the 16 sectors of government priority. We have the labor market information system in the department. So in 2019, we've created a forum where all of this information has to be consolidated, and in future, for the first time, we will produce a register of programs that colleges can offer. That will serve two purposes, to rationalize those that are no longer relevant and to scale up those that we actually need. So there will be a regulating instrument in that regard, which will be significant. Lastly, on the exams issue, Chair, we take it very seriously. We have had our own frustrations because, as you heard, for a big part of it, we don't have control over it. I am also involved in NSFAS. NSFAS has made a special effort to deploy somebody here to listen to what's been said. And I must say, this problem of data integration is such a sticky one that even at NSFAS, at the end point, that is what they are grappling with. The backlogs in NSFAS where they cannot fund 2015, 2016 students is because of the data integration, and that is what we are sitting with. The war room we spoke about, on the positive side, there are processes in place. The system is going to be tested. The intention is from March next year to shift the whole data warehouse into the department. And that project is 2 years in the making. And we can only be hopeful, but be assured that we will make every effort. We don't feel good either to account to students and to have to account to yourselves that we are not making progress. On the issue of those students who don't get certificated, we must not be anxious that the information is lost. The information is not lost. It is there. If a student sends a query now, within the next few minutes, we can draw on the data and confirm whether the student is going to be certificated. And that is what we are doing now. We are ensuring that when a student queries, we are able to pull out the data, assemble the information, and issue the certificate. But it's dealt with in crisis mode. That is what we are trying to assist at the moment.
Okay. The problem is that you want to explain it out.
I don't want people to be too anxious.
If that can be a frame of mind, we will lose it.
I know.
How we are supposed to approach it is to say, here we have got a crisis.
Yes,
how do we deal with the crisis? What kind of support do we need? And from where must we get the support? And how much is it going to cost for us to get the support? So that it doesn't become your problem, the two of you, and you are frustrated. It must be a departmental problem. It must be a problem of the minister. We can't explain it away that when somebody, if a student sends information, you are able to tell whether the student can be certificated or not. Why can't you issue the certificate? I mean, the logic dictates that that should be the case. But when you come with this kind of explanation, you see, you are it's like it's not a big problem.
No, we know it is a big problem. It is.
So
it is. Absolutely.
Let's say this thing is a crisis.
It is. Absolutely.
It needs to be attended like that.
Absolutely.
So I think let's wrap up.
Yes. And with that, Chair, I do conclude. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Let's wrap up. I think we've had a long engagement in the committee. In any case, we had planned like that, but I was thinking that we're going to finish 30 minutes before. At 2:30, now we're at 3:00, we'll have to rush that side. So the kind of engagements that we've had, it demonstrates that this issue is quite a serious issue to everybody. Parliament, to this committee, to the nation, that we need to turn around the system. The building blocks are there. We are going in the direction, but I think much more needs to be done. We must unlock this thing about certification. We must attend to the examination. We must make sure that there is sufficient resources that we put in place for infrastructure in the colleges. We must look at the curriculum. We must make sure that we have got the teaching staff that is sufficiently equipped. They are able to teach. They've been properly trained and so forth. One of the things I think that we are taking from here, I was saying to members that they shouldn't shoot the messenger who was the DG. Because the messenger came to present a message not properly dressed as a messenger or whatever the case may be. He is giving us the message that this sector is not sufficiently funded. So it's us who must engage with that. We must engage with the minister. We must engage with everybody else. There are two things that I think as a committee we have picked up, the underfunding of science and technology, because we want to go to 1.5% of the research and development of the GDP, that portion. We are far from that. The TVET sector is one of the issues that one of the sectors that is not adequately funded in this portfolio. So it's all of us are agreeing with the opposition. So we will go to battle for that. We will help you to engage in those battles. But also from the side of the administration, you must also try and do your best. The percentage of expenditure of the 1.3 billion that has been allocated is not satisfactory. I mean, we are approaching the second quarter, but we are far from 50% that we are targeting. So the money is there, it can be spent. This is what has been said. So you must also do your part to make sure that whatever little resource that is allocated, you spend that money. But otherwise, thank you very much, Safeta, for being here. I see you have you are living here with a very good friend of yours, Honorable Nodada. I was very impressed about your performance here. You can invite him to your conference, Congress. He'll come and speak passionately about the issues of TVET. Thank you very much, the principals, all of you. The meeting is adjourned. Must I make an announcement? Next week, Friday, we are supposed to have a colloquium. We are going to have to postpone it because of the responses that we are getting. So it will take place that other week on the 17th. Okay, the meeting's adjourned.